Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettina, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Tommy John Schiavone, our assemblyman in Albany, newly elected back in November and starting out on a whole new career in many ways. I was reading your biography a bit. You were a teacher for 30 years in Center Moriches. And among the things you were teaching was participation in government.
I did. I was a teacher for 32 years and mostly in the Santa Maria School District, which, of course, is west of here. Just a point of clarification, I was elected in November of 24. It's January now. We did have another election between. So I am starting my second year as representative in New York 1. So yeah, I was a teacher for 32 years. I went to SUNY Cortland. I got my teaching degree, actually went to school to be a teacher and became a teacher. I felt very honored to have that job. It really was, you know, what I went to school for. And I enjoy history and government. And so I taught what's called social studies. But my main concentration was participation in government, state and local government from Suffolk County Community College and economics.
I guess that would include all the presidents.
It would. Yeah. So I did a stint in middle school, which was frankly a blast. And I had a lot of fun with it. We used to take a lot of trips and, you know, middle school kids are fun. They're eighth graders. It was the level that I taught. So we taught the different eras of U.S. history. And I really enjoyed doing it over 30 years.
So did you retire or... Did you have an epiphany that suggested you might want to take your own advice?
You know, I was hired when I was 25 years old. And so by 55, I had 30 years in. And I retired when I was elected to the Southampton Town Board. And I kind of liken it to changing lanes. I'm retired, but not really. But I had been involved in government while I was teaching. I was on the zoning board in the village of North Haven. I was a trustee on the North Haven Village Board. I was also on the zoning board of appeals in the town of Southampton. And I credit a lot of my entry into politics to my wife, Andrea, who is a judge she's currently a New York State Family Court judge, but she was elected to justice in the town of Southampton in 2008, and she created the court in the village of Sag Harbor. So, you know, we would work together on her elections and whatnot. And that's kind of how I got involved townwide anyway.
What are you particularly excited about in Albany that we can talk about?
You know, something that I really believe that the South Fork needs is increased transportation. That's no secret to anyone, right? Traffic is a nightmare. But we do have an underutilized transportation link in the railroad. I fought last year to get the MTA fully funded. And that means that the projects have a much, much better chance of actually moving forward. And one of the projects in the hopper is to upgrade the Montauk line between Spionk, Remsenburg, and Montauk to have more train service on the South Fork. I'm the only elected official that publicly supported fully funding the MTA capital plan on Long Island. And I also am in support of congestion pricing. Whenever they had press conferences and rallies, I was the guy from Long Island saying, we need this. And not only just for the Montauk line of the Long Island Railroad, but also for the health of New York City. The entire region depends on the health of New York City. So upgrading that line is important to me. It's going to cost $262 million. And what they would essentially need to do is to install sidings where trains can pull off and another train can go by, and then upgrade the signaling system, and then do work on a number of the different train platforms, because we're turning the transportation around. Instead of facing New York City, now it's going to face New York City as well as east, so that folks have an option to get to work in the morning on the South Fork.
How many trains a day are there currently going back and forth?
There are two trains that have been added, and then there are another two trains that currently exist. Two trains, so that would be four east and four west. But the existing trains have always been at odd times. The trains that my predecessor, Fred Thiel, who did a lot of this work, we all owe a great deal to his work. He got two extra trains in the morning, leaving Spionk at 6. I got to get the times. One's like 6:30 and the other is 8. And they would go east and then they would come back home at 3:30 and about 4. And then there are other ones. There's a later one that leaves at 7. But it really is an underutilized transportation link.
It would be added if this takes place, or when this takes place.
Ideally, I would like to see them hourly into the evening. Yep. Right now, there's a lot of people who can take it in the morning, but in the afternoon, it doesn't work for them. A lot of the jobs out here are not 9 to 5 or regularly scheduled jobs. You know, they're jobs that if something comes up, you've got to stay. And that means that you miss your train. So I would love to see them hourly. That way people grow trust in public transportation and they know that the train's going to be there and they can take it home. That's the ultimate goal.
What else is on the table that you're working on?
Well, we're going to be putting, for the 7th year, the Montaukets have re-recognition of the Montaukets has been vetoed. I'm going to be putting that bill back in. I'm going to be putting that bill in again this January. I'm meeting with the leadership of the Montaukett Nation. And so we're going to be putting that one in. And I'm confident that the Montaukets will be re-recognized. Just a little backstory on this. This is not a recognition bill. This is a bill to right a wrong that happened in 1910. There was a court case between Benson v. Farrow. This is Benson as in Bensonhurst out in Montauk. And the judge, a New York State Supreme Court judge, ruled that the Montaukets were extinct. And they're not. There were 75 of them in the courtroom. And legally, at that time, the only body that had the power to do that was the United States Congress. And so the bill that I'm putting forward is re-recognition because New York State did not have the authority to make the ruling that they did in 1910. And they're still around. You know, I went to school with people who are the Montaukets. I mean, it's kind of... I don't mean to be flippant about it, but, you know, to re-recognizing people who currently exist is just... You know.
I guess during my time here, and I studied a lot of history, I didn't really come across them as an organized tribe. They had been scattered by this terrible guy, Benson, who paid to leave.
Some of them went to there's about 1,000 Montaukets between Montauk and into Brooklyn, you know, across Long Island. And so, yeah, they are somewhat scattered. They've got a tribal government, but they're not organized in a way that you think they might be. In other words, it's not like the Puspatuk, the Unkichug on the Puspatuk Nation, you know, because they've got their tribal governments. They are recognized by the state of New York. The Shinnecock, of course, are recognized by the state of New York and the United States. And this is what we're seeking to do with the Montaukets is to get this recognition, you know, so they will form themselves, you know, in a way that is going to be commensurate with the other nations that have been recognized in New York State.
Have you ever looked into the offshore windmills that what they say is they are providing the power to about 80,000 homes, if you look at it? And I tried to parse it to see if it was being tried at a great expense or lesser expense. Is that something worth looking into?
Oh, yeah. Well,
they kind of mushed all of the power into one pot. You know, they came from all different sources. So I couldn't figure it out, but it might be worth doing.
Well, New York is going to need more electricity. That's a fact. Our increasing demand is being caused by a number of things, namely upstate. A lot of these data processing centers are calling for a lot more electricity. Do you like using AI? Well, that takes electricity. And so there's a couple of those being constructed in upstate New York, and that's taxing the entire statewide grid. But on Long Island, you know, we're seeing an increase in population and an increase in use in electricity. So to dismantle these projects at this stage, 80% into them, it just makes no sense to me. I believe that this is politically motivated, and, you know, I'm not a fan. I believe that we should be using green energy and renewable energy. I mean, it's a capital investment. It costs a lot to build. But then once you build it, it's just maintenance. And I think it should be said that these are jobs. These are Long Island jobs. These are high tech jobs, the people who are going to be working on these. But I'm very disappointed to see that the permits have been pulled on the federal level. And I believe it's punitive, and I think it's politically motivated.
Easy to work in Albany, or is it difficult to get things going how you want them to?
Well, government is designed a certain way, and it's designed for things to move slowly. That's just kind of baked into the system. And the theory being is we want to take a nice long look at things that are being done in government, so anybody who wants to give input has the opportunity to do so. So I would say it is a legislature and you have to get your bills through committees, a variety of committees, and then onto the floor. And then you need another sponsor in the other house, the New York State Senate, and move these things through. Yeah, it definitely, it's not an easy task. It's one that's based on relationships and making sure that your bills are moving. Last year, my first year, I had 11 bills that were passed by the New York State Assembly, which is it's a good amount. And I'm proud of that. A lot of them are local bills in Southampton and East Hampton towns and Southold towns. And so there's definitely a knowledge base and a skill set there. And again, I'd like to give a shout out to my predecessor, Fred Thiel. He's a phone call away. I don't call him too much, but, there are definitely times when, I've called Fred, especially during budget time in New York State. That is an important time. Next week, we are going to hear the governor's state of the state. That's when she outlines her vision for the New York State budget. And then in that budget, that's where you want to get a lot of the funding programs that affect the first district. Last year, I got funding for a bus loop that connects the South Fork commuter connections. We were talking about the trains earlier. Well, the buses that connect to the trains, those are funded by the state of New York. And that's something that we have to fight to get back into the budget each year. Also, the Peconic Estuary Partnership, we got them $750,000. And so these are the things that you have to, make sure happen on the state level and in the budget. So there's an energy up there. There's lobbyists from all over the state. And, you have to keep the eye on the ball as far as, what we need in the first district.
Is anything else you wanted to mention that you're hopeful will be put into the popper after she speaks?
Well, we have a behavioral health initiative on the North and South Fork that we've been maintaining here for many years. And I would like to see that fully funded in the New York State budget. Also, upgrades on the Stony Brook Southampton College campus. We got funding to redo the windmill and a lot of the buildings are going down. There's plans there to improve that. And that's going to take a collaboration between the state of New York and local governments, namely the town of Southampton. But, we're all kind of holding our breath this year with the cuts that are occurring on the federal government. And we just found out this morning that the federal government is cutting $10 billion in child care funding in Democratic states. This is in response to what was happening in Minnesota. So the federal government just went ahead and cut $10 billion from California, Colorado, Minnesota, and New York and Illinois. These are blue states and it's absolutely targeted. So that's the stuff that we have to deal with in the budget. New York State, we have commitments to things like childcare and social services and something that's near and dear to my heart, education. A lot of cuts that we see on the federal government do affect education. These are things that are important to New York State that we want to make sure that we either backfill or get the federal government to honor their commitments.
Anything that has come up that is a frustration where it sort of can't get it to?
Well, I got a bill through the Senate and with Senator Hinchey and through the Assembly, and it went over to the governor and it was vetoed. And this was a bill that would require the state and county health departments just to report the cases of tick-borne illnesses in their counties throughout the state of New York. I read the veto memo and it said that there are budgetary concerns and that they would have to hire more people. And, that was their reasoning. But I have to say, I'm frustrated with that one. And I'm also frustrated with the veto on the Montaukett bill, because I just think it's beyond time to re-recognize the Montaukets.
Well, thank you for your time. I know you're pressed to get going the rest of the day, and I really appreciate it. It's good to talk to you, and I'm glad we spoke, and we'll talk again.
Well, Dan, thanks for having me on. I'm actually going to be heading to Albany today, and I love the hat. It's the Dan's hat. It's awesome. Again, thanks for having me on, and hopefully we can speak soon.
Sure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.